listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and good evening for Sunday, July 3rd, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly. Good to have you join me this evening. Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular church services. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, and we do this by way, well, by many ways. One of them is this radio program. We talk about metaphysical topics with a focus on a variety of practical life skills. It's a program about enhancing the human condition, both spiritually and physically. Tonight, we are going to talk about reinventing yourself to identify and follow your life purpose. And there's also going to be a guided meditation session, about 16 minutes or so long. The theme tonight is Make Your Dreams Come True. I'd like to welcome those who are listening to the live broadcast, as well as those listening to the archive, those in the chat room. Nice to have you with us tonight. Of course, coming up in about an hour, at the top of the hour, 10 p.m. Eastern, is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective, and she will be taking your calls and offering advice and, general information to cure anything that ails you. Ha! All right, maybe not quite, to that extent, but she'll help. So stay tuned for her after we're done with this program. Tonight I'm going to talk about reinventing yourself to identify and follow your life purpose. We're going to talk about reevaluating your core values a little bit, basically looking at things in a different way, and see if we can't give you some ideas on achieving your dream, living your dream, and getting the most out of life now. You know, for eons, and this is not news, but for eons, humans have been searching for those existential answers, haven't they? You know, who are we? Where do we come from? Where are we going? Why are we here? All that sort of thing. You know, a lot of folks ask, what is the meaning of life? Of course, big questions. They've always been on humanity's mind. Well, rather than asking, what's the meaning of life, it's much better if we ask, what's the meaning of my life? You know, meaning is a very personal thing, life meaning. It's different for each one of us. So don't search for the proverbial meaning of life. Search for the meaning for your life, the meaning of your life. While these greater questions that I just mentioned, who are we, where are we going as a race, as humanity, those questions are elusive for us, obviously. However, to answer that question about what the meaning of your life is, what's the meaning of my life, that's not a question that's elusive. You can answer that question. That one is within your reach. And so we're going to give you some ideas tonight to answer that question. Most of the information, obviously, in this program and in every program is to get you thinking. You know, that's my job. I want to get you thinking. I want to offer new perspectives and get you thinking about perhaps things that you haven't thought about, or if you have thought about them, get you thinking about them in a new way, from a new angle, a new perspective. Isn't that what life is really about? When you look at things, it's like standing in a room. You look at the room from one angle, you go to the other side of the room and look at it from the other angle, or you lay on your back on the floor and look at the ceiling. It's all from a different perspective. You see things that you wouldn't ordinarily see. So that's what we're going to do. One of my favorite people, Viktor Frankl, the late Viktor Frankl, in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, also one of my favorite books. I've read it, I've read parts of it many times, the part on logotherapy, the part on him surviving the concentration camp, I read once, and I can't go there much anymore, so I don't read that part, just not what I like to focus on, but he is a great book. Anyway, he listed three things that add meaning to one's life. Number one, you can add meaning to your life by creating a work or a deed. Number two, by experiencing something or encountering someone. And three, by the attitude that we take toward unavoidable suffering. Obviously, that was something he learned in the concentration camp. Many have found it a long and arduous task in figuring out what they really want to do with their lives. But this is crucial. This step is crucial to living a meaningful life. In fact, Viktor Frankl also said that the primary reason why we have aggression, depression, and addiction is because people lack a meaningful purpose in their lives. And I believe he's right. The late comedian George Burns said, "We need to find some reason to get out of bed each morning." And John Homer Miller emphasized this when he wrote, "Discover what you want most of all in this world and set yourself to work on it." And so these are the basis for getting the most out of life. We need to find a good reason to get out of bed each morning, something that excites us, something that we're passionate about, something that adds meaning to our life. For example, Isaac Asimov, the late author, epitomized the discovery of our special desire. When he was asked what he would do if he only had 6 months left to live, he replied, "Type faster." You know, now there's a man who knew what he wanted out of life. You know, can we do the same thing? You know, he was an author. Type faster. That's what brought him fulfillment. If we ask you the same question, or if you were asked the same question, what would your response be? If you had 6 months to live, what would you do? That's a good question to have an answer to. You want to type faster, whatever that means for you. You know, we can pursue an endless variety of vocations that demand an endless variety of talents and expertise. We are only limited by our imagination and our dreams. Discovering one's purpose is a highly personal decision that we all must make individually, and no one else, remember this, no one else has the right to judge us for our choices, provided we do no harm. And incidentally, if we don't make this choice actively, intentionally, the choice will be made for us by default. If you don't want to make a choice about your life, somebody else will make that choice for you. If you don't want to set meaningful goals for your life, somebody else will set those goals for you. Either way, a choice will be made. Either you make it or it's made by default. We even have a choice as to whether we make a choice about our life and our purpose and the meaning that we get out of it. So make an active choice with regard to your life purpose. Why not resolve right here and right now to pursue your life's ambition? We can find meaning and fulfillment in many different areas, from many different avenues in life if we just look. Just as happiness is where we see it, so fulfillment and meaning can be found as well. It all depends on our outlook and our attitude. So let's talk about a couple of other things now as we continue through this. I want to talk about the difference between the meaning of life and the purpose in life. They are different. We don't want to confuse the two. Here's the difference in these two. The meaning of life remains constant, while the purpose of life can change. I'll repeat that. The meaning of life remains constant, while the purpose of life can change. The meaning of our lives is built upon values and beliefs. The purpose of our lives involves what we do day to day to pursue those values and beliefs. Oh, and by the way, just as a quick side point, it's July 3rd in the United States, so if you hear a bunch of explosions, it's the neighbors setting off fireworks. Happy 4th of July to everybody in the U.S., and happy belated Canada Day to those in Canada. All right, let's go back to this whole point, because I don't want this to get past us. The meaning of life remains constant. The purpose of life can change. Both meaning, the meaning and the purpose of life add value to each other. They're joined at the hip, so to speak. For us to find fulfillment, we need to have both. It's only when we embrace our heart's desire and combine the meaning of our life with the purpose of our life that we bring true fulfillment to our life. If we are shackled with a career or a job that we really just don't like, then we remain imprisoned in our own self-made hell. And as long as we do this, we will find very little enjoyment and fulfillment in life. If you're not happy with where you're at right now, then you owe it to yourself to pursue your treasured desire. And if you don't know what that is, just hang on, we're getting to it. Life is way too short, and it's way too long to spend it doing something you don't like. So, don't come down with a bad case of the if-onlys. I've talked about this before. My father used to say the two saddest words in any language are if-only. You know, if only I had raised the children better. If only I had taken a different route home. If only I had told him or her how I really feel. If only I had seen it coming. If only I'd made a different choice. So, you know, we can if-only ourselves to death. And these if-onlys are just another form of guilt, and they carry serious risks to our mental health if we continue to focus on them. They can also lead to shame if we begin to feel bad about ourselves instead of something we did. You know the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt's you feel bad about something you did. Shame's you feel bad about yourself. If we have shame or guilt, really, we never live up to our true potential because we perpetually denigrate ourselves right down to the foundations of our very soul. So, how do we neutralize the if-onlys? Well, one way is by adopting the philosophy that, as a rule, we are all trying to do our best with the current knowledge, experience, and resources that we have at the moment. You know, that's a great outlook, honestly. You know, most people do not lay awake at night scheming on how to get somebody or to get you or to do something to you or anybody else. You know, a lot of folks are just not as thoughtful as they could be. And that's primarily because they lack awareness. And that's part of our job here at MCHS Church and the Metaphysics Institute is to raise awareness. It's probably part of your job, too. If you're into metaphysics, it's kind of one of the common denominators of metaphysicians, raise awareness. So remember that. We're all doing the best we can with what we have to work with at the moment, the knowledge, the skills, the experience, and so forth. Now, here's something else you need to remember about this. My best today is not necessarily my best tomorrow. You know, we're human. We can get sick. We can have an off day. We can have a great day. You got to remember that. Do your best. Always do your best with what you have to work with at the moment. It's not an excuse, but you know, for not doing something correct. But what it does is it keeps you real. And I'm all for being a real live human being. It's very important that you look at yourself in a real way. And here's another thing, another method of neutralizing the if-onlys. You know, we all wish that somehow we could make today's decisions with tomorrow's knowledge and experience, but life just doesn't work that way. So, you know, we know this, but yet we still cling to that behavior about kicking ourselves and so forth. So be reasonable and be realistic. You can only do so much. Do your best at any given time. And in all fairness, it could be said that the concept of if-only could be used positively or in a positive way too. And that's if we use it to avoid known pitfalls down the road. For example, my father also had a little sign on the dashboard in his car, and it said, if only. Now, he used that to remind himself to fasten a seatbelt. And to him, you know, he didn't want to be in the awful position of saying, if only I put my seatbelt on, I or a passenger may not have been hurt in that wreck or whatever. So you could use it in a positive way, too. All right, so let's talk about discovering your purpose and your meaning in life. Here's a question that I have often asked my seminar groups over the years. And the question is this: are you living your dream? When I ask that question, most most of the time, nobody raised their hand. You know, I say anybody, if you're living your dream, raise your hand. Most of the time, I wouldn't get, nobody would raise their hands. Now, every so often, a person might raise their hand, in some cases, two. But it was so fascinating to me. And what about you? Are you living your dream? If you're not raising your hand, why not? And if not now, when? I've often talked about my father, too, who was a brilliant man. I may have talked about him last week, but I often talk about him. He was a brilliant man. He was a good man. He helped a lot of people. And he could have done a lot more, but he was so weighed down with a cult religion and an alcoholic marriage and stuff like that, that he just couldn't think clearly. And I often encouraged him to write a book and do all these things. And, of course, he said that was just too much work. But here's the thing. You know, my dad died at 70 years old with his music still in him. And that's a great quote. And I at this point, forget where I originally heard that. It might have been from Zig Ziglar. But he died with his music still in him. We've all heard the phrase that life is short. I just used it a little bit ago. But do we really think about it? You know, the cold, hard fact is that not one of us has a guarantee that we will be alive here in this world in 1 minute, 60 seconds, let alone a day or a week or a month or a year. You know, the saddest day of anybody's life is if they're on their deathbed looking back and having a bad case of the woulda, coulda, shouldas, the if-onlys, the might-have-beens. In other words, while the end of life is certainly sad, it could even be said that it's sadder when somebody realizes that he or she wasted so much of their lives worrying about petty matters and struggling to eke out an existence so much that they completely forgot to really live. They lost the opportunity to focus on the most important aspects of life, and one of those, of course, is friends, family, relationships, and another one is what the hell it's all about. That's what we're studying, right? The saddest thing, really, is for somebody to die with their music still in them. Don't die with your music still in you. That would indeed be a sad day. You know, and perhaps one of the biggest ailments to afflict humanity is that people take themselves way too seriously. I've been alluding to that a little bit. You can see this all over the planet with their petty land disputes, religious intolerance, general tribal warfare. You know, it reminds me of a bunch of little boys in a sandbox all fighting over where their own corner begins and the other one's ends. You know, I love the words of Plato. Nothing in the affairs of man is worth worrying about. Regardless of our technology and our advances and so forth, those words are as true today as they were 2,500 years ago. And frankly, they'll be true in another 2,500 years. Nothing in the affairs of man is worth worrying about. Come back down to earth. Be a real life human being. Don't take yourself too seriously. Really focus on what's important in life. And that's the point. As I said before, life is way too short and it's way too long to waste it doing something you just can't get into. So let's discuss about how to change or discover your purpose and meaning in life. If you don't know it already, you might already, and that's fine. And if you do, good for you. Perhaps the stuff I'm talking about will be a validation for you. The first step is to answer a very simple question that can be very difficult to answer. That question is, what do I call a good day? Now think about that for a minute. What do I call a good day? What do you call a good day? Think about it. That question can be very difficult to answer at times, but once you answer it, you now have the key that literally unlocks the potential of your life and will give you great meaning and fulfillment and provide you with a purpose. The answer that we give will also determine what's closest to our hearts, what truly inspires us. Now, if you're having a hard time answering, what do I call a good day? Well, here's some additional questions that might help you. What truly inspires me? What motivates me? What excites me about life? What brings me joy? How do I define happiness? And if money was no object, how would I spend my time? That's a good one. If money was not an issue, what would you be doing with your time? Now, if these questions still don't help you, well, let's look at it a little bit different. How about these questions? What do I call a bad day? What does not inspire me? What does not motivate me? What does not excite me about life? What does not bring me joy? How do I define unhappiness? You sometimes can look at it from the other side of things and rule things out to arrive at what truly inspires you, what you call a good day, what you're motivated by, what you're excited by. Now, these questions obviously require some thought, some extensive thought, if you haven't gone through the process already. They also really require you to know yourself well. And it may take a little time for you to come up with answers that you feel good about. But once you do answer that question, what do I call a good day, you will be well on your way to finding purpose and meaning in your life. It's a powerful question. So that's the first step of discovering your purpose and subsequently the meaning in your life. Answer that question, what do I call a good day? Here's another one. Set and regularly reaffirm your intent. This involves deliberate intent. Now, deliberate intent is one of the most powerful aspects of consciousness that any sentient entity has. Deliberately and intensely putting your wants and intentions out to the universe, these things that you dream about, putting them out to the universe will have a positive effect. And this is done through intense thought and meditation, heartfelt thought. What do you want? Now, it's not a magic pill either. You don't just intensely think about it and voila, you've got it. It takes time too. So don't forget about that. This is really a powerful approach. Regularly reaffirm your intent each day. Anecdotal evidence suggests that the simple act of deliberate intention registers your wants and desires with a universal consciousness or the Akashic record, whatever you want to call it, which can then set things into motion for their attainment. Deliberate intent is powerful. I've talked about on previous shows where that comes to mind I've forgotten his name and I should know it, but I apologize. But the polygraph expert, it's right on the tip of my tongue. The polygraph expert that was, you know, doing research and hooked the polygraph up to the plant, and then he just had a thought about burning one of the leaves to see what if it would register on the polygraph. Well, before he could even do it, the polygraph registered. The plant picked up on it. You know, that's deliberate intent, and that's what you put out to the universe. So we're always putting deliberate intent out to the universe, aren't we? We're always thinking things. We might have strong emotional thoughts about something or another. Are those things positive or are they negative? Well, you don't want the negatives because what you focus on is what comes about. So deliberate intent should be positive, and you should put it out into the universe. Now, this involves visualization and imagination, so you want to use those as well. If you are not living your dream, but you know what it is, you need to visualize and imagine it as if real. Just take a little time each day and visualize, because that's powerful. That's how your mind works. Visualization. Your imagination is the most powerful thing. Your current life circumstances, regardless of what they are just proof of how powerful your imagination is, because you are where you are because of you, because of your thoughts, because of the choices that you've made. I am too. We all are. You've undoubtedly heard the old saying, change your thoughts, change your world. Well, it's true. And what I like to use all the time is this one. If you want your outside world to change, you must first change your inside world. You want your outside world to change, you got to change your inside world first, because that's where it all begins. Everything around us is a replication of our inner world. If we are in a happy relationship, then that's part of our inner world. If we're not, well, that is too. Now, you got to take this within reason, too. Things happen in life, but generally speaking, our outside world is a manifestation of our inside world. Now, when you visualize something, you are, in effect, setting intent. That's that deliberate intent. When you repeat these visualizations, you are reaffirming and strengthening that deliberate intent. And that's important. You can literally control physiological responses to your body through visualization. You can de-stress. You can promote bodily healing. You can even, you know, there have been cases of spontaneous remission of diseases. So your imagination, your mind is powerful. Use it in the fulfillment of your dream, in finding meaning in life. Go deep. So to just recap, how do you discover your purpose and meaning in life? Well, first of all, answer that question, what do I call a good day? Then set and reaffirm deliberate intent, and then use visualization to strengthen that deliberate intent. So these are some of the things about reinventing yourself and identifying and following your life purpose. I can't stress it enough. And I'll tell you, I'll give you my life as an example. Right here and now, and for some time, I have been living my dream. And it's interesting because, you know, you don't wake up one day and all of a sudden, you know, it's like an epiphany. Hey, I'm living my dream. You know, it dawns on you, I guess. At least it did for me. Maybe you will have an epiphany. For me, it just kind of came into being. I always said how great it would be for me to be able to work from home and to write things like I'm writing, do things like I'm doing in an effort to help people get past the things that hold them back, to help the world evolve, to help humanity step up to that next level, to raise the vibrational level, to do this sort of thing. And that's what I'm doing and have been doing. And it wasn't always easy. You know, I mean, it's not easy to do that sometimes. I had to come off the road and doing the secular stuff. But it worked. It happened. And you know what? As I look back over my life, it's amazing. I always get what I want. You know, aside from that trip to the far side of the moon, I've gotten everything I've wanted. And of course, my wants and desires are within reason. They make me stretch, but they're still attainable. So there's an example to take. But what about you? I bet that's true for you, too. Or at least you're in the process of getting what you want. Now, does that mean I've gotten everything I've wanted or that I currently want? No, because I currently want it. There's still some other things that I want. For example, you know, I want a training and retreat center for the church and for the Metaphysics Institute. I want that. I want a place where people can come to have an intensive experience and of self-realization, self-actualization. I want to be able to have classes for the community and to have a chapel, quote-unquote, for video broadcasts of the weekly church services. And I want to have people around. I want to have that, and I will one of these days. It will happen. I always get what I want. What about you? Do you always get what you want? Will you always get what you want? You can do that by setting your deliberate intent, visualizing what would it be like to live that dream. If you're not living your dream, think about that. What do you do each day? How does it feel? How does it make you feel? What positive things are you bringing about to the world, to those within your sphere of influence? So I hope that some of this has been helpful to you and given you some ideas. And if you are living your dream, good for you. Keep up the good work. If you're not, you will be soon enough. Just focus on it. Now, coming up in the rest of this program, we have another meditation, guided meditation for you. This one's about 16 minutes, and it carries the theme, Make Your Dreams Come True. So what I'm going to do is to give you an opportunity for a quick pit stop or break. I'll play a quick song, about 3 or so minutes long, and then when we come back, I'm going to play this guided meditation, and this will be your opportunity to sit back and relax and enjoy. So Stay with me. I'll play a song, and we'll come back in about 3 or so minutes and do the guided meditation. Okay, welcome back. We're going to do the guided meditation now. Again, it carries the theme along with my talk, Making Your Dreams Come True. What I want you to do is to just relax, sit back, enjoy this next 16 minutes. It is your time. Nobody wants anything, no demands. Make it your time. Just get into the moment and just let it happen. Here we go.
This program is hypnotic in nature and is never to be experienced in a moving vehicle or other times when you need to maintain awakened consciousness. Welcome aboard your enlightening adventure. For if you've let so-called impediments prevent you from achieving your heart's dreams, then this is your time to sit or lie back, more comfortably relaxed, perhaps reassured by the perseverance shown by the illustrious hero of Greek legend, Odysseus, whose ingenious ruse captured the Trojan city, and whose continual resourcefulness conquered each seeming adversity. Odysseus finally reaching his dreams by coming home to his own country. For isn't home where you bring your heart's dreams? Though as this long-told epic by sea unfolds, Odysseus is still far from home, stranded, moreover, with no form of navigation, on the land of the Lotus Eaters, farmers, generously offering some of their own food, a delicious plant everyone hungrily devoured. Though the lotus flower soon proven to be spurious, delicious, true, but those who partook of this flower food lost all thought, all longing for home and their own hearts' true dreams. Overwhelmed solely by their desire to dwell forever in the country of the soul-numbing lotus flower, growing ever more reconciled to while away the hours, engaged in the same humdrum everyday routine. The life of bemused comfort and seeming ease. And though Odysseus too partook of the lotus flower, resolutely focused upon his dream, deeply believed he was completely immune to the plant's power. For Odysseus sought far more than the familiar, secure routine. He sought to realize what makes him feel fulfilled, to take in his hands the life his own heart demands, actualize his genuine potential in his own homeland, and completely instilled with his mind's commanding vision, Odysseus chose to leave behind the island's secure comfort zone and really find his heart's true home, the home of his dreams. And so drawn to the shore, we see the hero, Odysseus, a look of purpose, of determination in his eyes, searching the horizon, the line where ocean currents meet clear blue skies, searching for the means to reach the home too long left behind. And with his known resourcefulness, he conceived a plan, and from some trees produced wood and vines too, to bind the wood and design a craft. A raft equipped with mast and sail, and at last he continued on his trail, seaward, toward his destined meeting with the source of his dreams. This magnetic force pictured within his mind's eye, luring, drawing him ever further inside. These seas wide, wide opening upon his dreams, as if decreed by the Olympic deities, predestined to be. And since we're all drawn by captivating dreams, you too may appreciate departing the familiar life routine, venturing inside your own heart's land of dreams. For herein resides a potent energy source, your infinitely magical life force, ready to formulate your most treasured imaginings. So even if you were once led astray by the naysayings of others and did not yet realize the energizing force of your own dreams, then you can especially enjoy journeying inside your life force, only desiring to be summoned forth. So you are provided your freedom, effortless freedom, to gratify your life's deepest fantasies. Yes, you can enjoy not having to do anything. You don't even have to listen to me, because your inner, wiser self is exploring for you. You're transporting life-transforming adventure. For you know when you're drifting within, inwardly, your deeper self can conceive visionary dreams. In those dreams, you can venture wherever you desire, even explore far across these ocean seas, to see a few misty, wispy clouds shrouding otherwise clear blue skies. As you lie back, more comfortably relaxed upon your own craft, your raft equipped with mast and sail, a breezy gale speeding you onward on your trail, right inside the wide opening life force sea. These currents streaming forth confident energy, leading you homeward right toward your dreams. And so as you breathe in deeply, deeply, the gentle ocean breeze, when do you perceive how your breathing movements more closely resemble the rise and fall of these streaming currents? How each rise soothingly through you and enlightening you with the confident belief you can live your life as you demand your life to be, your commanding dream, your destination, serenely pictured in your mind's eye. With each breath deep, deep, perceive inside your positive conviction. You need only ride freely astride your own life stream, your life force releasing freely all the resources you need to keep you on course to your dream. And isn't it a comforting feeling to depend on your own current flow, trusting the current knows just where to go? So even on seeming stormy, turbulent occasions, when rough seas seem to toss your craft to and fro, you need only breathe deeply the renewing ocean breeze. For how soon before you realize skies growing fair, clearing the ocean more gently streaming. For each breath deep, deep, sending currents of confident energy, pouring warmly through you the inner certainty you can do whatever necessary to achieve your dreams, your life force steering you clear through ever calmer seas, preserving you on your unswerving uniform course. Your dreamed destination, so deeply believed, sends within your persistent spirit. So those seeming rough seas are simply your invitation to become stronger, more resourceful in your solutions, your magical source, formulating the precise inspirations you need, strengthening you with your confident expectancy. I can live my life as I demand my life to be. Yes. As you're streaming forward with your own life sea, sense the force in your demeanor, a new commanding presence, the absolute assurance you can achieve your dreams, as if decreed by a friendly providence, predestined to be. So those occasions the wind seems to cease, life seems to take the wind from your sails, and you make slow headway upon your trail, you need only remember those earlier occasions when you really came through, maintained your chosen course of navigation, reached your heart's true destination. For when your body breathes more deeply, deeply, perceive each breath drawing forth once more your self-assurance, your commanding sense of confidence, pouring warmly through you and so thoroughly energizing you. How soon before you realize, rising, rising right from behind you, a gale of wind is streaming, swelling your sails, propelling you forward, your renewed resolution, your enthusiasm leading you onward on your trail. right by the island of the sirens. Those melodious singers who tried to mystify mariners with naysaying songs. Long rhapsodies of their so-called worldly wisdom, really a concoction of misconceived, misleading notions, intended only to lure sailors astray, away from their true destination, and draw them to the siren's land instead, the island of the narrow-minded. For those with an expanded awareness perceive most certainly, as do you, you can achieve your own commanding dreams. So as your body naturally breathes more deeply, how soon before you sense, emerging forth freely, your stream of confident energy, now streaming out, outwardly, swirling about and surrounding you, all the confidence you feel, your own potent force field, shielding you completely from those naysaying tunes, as you stream right by secure, self-assuredly relaxed, as if your ears were closed by wax, and so choosing to leave the sirens far, far behind. Why not spend your time with those more positive in mind? For do you find the confident energy that shields you is positively too an attractive force field, drawing to you energy of a similar nature to your own, so you likely notice, as if magically, just the right opportunities and the right people, too, seem to be drawn to you, offering all the support you need on your course to your dreams. So if you require faster means to reach your destination, don't be surprised to realize solutions right in front of you, like presently a favorable wind leading your raft to the island kingdom of the Phaeacians, reputed seamen proficient in the craft of navigation, their palace rising higher, higher before you. So when you come ashore, how soon before you venture through this palace courtyard, the royal guard summoning you within the main chamber room to meet the learned elders, concertedly greeting you with the honor to an adventurer of the ocean sea. Surely these paragons of wisdom are charmed, captured by your alluring dream, naturally drawn toward your self-assurance inside. For they admire the force of your positive conviction, your enthusiasm, your passion for life, your eyes shining with expansive vision, and desire only to support you and give you a hand, even furnish you with a ship to speed you forward to your destined meeting with your own homeland. Your dreams deeply believed, ever nearer, clearly seen. You need only extend your hand and grasp these. Yes, you can live your life as you demand your life to be. And when sensing deeply this commanding belief, then each new morn, how soon before you see your dream arise on your horizons opening wide as the endless extending sea. For you need only glide through any life challenge, confidently balanced astride your supporting life stream, a gentle breeze leading you forward toward the life of your dreams.
Now, as you are deeply relaxed, I'm going to count to three. Just start coming back to waking awareness. One, feeling very refreshed, coming back around. Two, eyes just beginning to open a little bit, feeling very positive, on top of the world. And three, eyes open wide. You can achieve anything you desire. You can live your dream. You can discover your purpose. Above all things, remember, stand tall, be true to yourself, think for yourself, leave your mark on the world, believe in yourself and what you do, and above everything else, don't die with your music still in you. Well, this begins to wrap up our program, at least this portion of the program for tonight. I appreciate everybody joining us tonight, either in the live chat room or on the archive. Next week, I'll have another interesting topic. If you like what you're hearing, do a couple of things. Tell others about it. Help us to spread it. Because on first glance, this might not be exactly the most exciting show when you just read about it. But if you like what you're hearing and it's helping you, tell others about it if you would. And also join the MCHS Church. You can find us at mchschurch.org if you're not already a member. If you'd like to learn more about metaphysics, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. This is Doug Kelly, encouraging you to listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Stay tuned for Dr. Vicki coming up next. Have a great week.
This has been Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
Power of the Spirit is a production of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, Incorporated.
This is the MCHS Educational Network. Please visit us at mchschurch.org. This is Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective on the MCHS Educational Network. And now, Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective, Intuitive Life Advice. We're live on the MCHS Educational Network, giving you a venue to ask your questions. Feel free to call in. I think I still have a little delay on my music, and there I go. I must learn this, I'm afraid. All right, tonight's topic that I wanted to address is a question that was asked of me this week. Really good question about what is the difference between opinion and judgment. I'm having a little difficulty with my internet at the moment. I still have music when I turn off the player. Oh, there we go. Okay, I have a delay, I'm afraid, in my internet. And when I turn off the player, it's come back on. I have a reverse thing. Must be some kind. I even blew up my microwave this week, so I don't know quite what's going on with the electrical energy, but It's there. So, anyway, opinion versus judgment. So, Dr. Doug, is that... Okay, I have to refresh my... Sorry, everyone. I've just refreshed. Am I on? Do you have me?
Yep. Yeah, it has nothing to do with your... You need to turn off the player on your... on the page you were listening to the previous part on.
I see. So is everything all right now?
You're good. You've been good ever since you started. And probably long before that, too.
That's a good one. All right, opinion versus judgment. We'll get back to the topic. It's a funny thing with all these gadgets, you know. Someone asked me, where is that fine line between opinion versus judgment and when somebody thinks that your opinion is a judgment? Well, I mean, we can take some pretty basic, some common understandings, such as people who are particularly religious. And if if they say, if you do not believe this, then you're going to go and quote unquote burn in hell. That's a judgment. They have their opinion, but it is turned into, if you do not agree, then something will occur to you. So it is that, we can go back to that do no harm, which could determine whether or not something is a judgment. That is almost a believing in harm or wishing harm. Now, if we take everyday occurrences, just everyday dynamic with people, you have a particular opinion on politics, on raising children, all the things you should really never have discussions with people about, because it's bound to conjure up some kind of debate. But again, a debate could be very healthy because it feeds for ideas, provided, again, it's not imposing a judgment. There are times, however, when you're setting your own boundaries for yourself. If you're setting your boundaries in your life and how you want to conduct your life, it can seem like you are putting forth a judgment. For instance, I have a rule. I don't like behaviors of people who've had too much to drink. You know, I don't drink as a rule. So, if I do have a glass of wine, that's a big deal. And other people to sit and have a glass of wine, that's fine. But there's a point. I have this kind of philosophy that nothing really good happens after 11 o'clock. But let's say it's during the day, people happen to be in excess. Well, I don't like that behavior when things get in excess. Because it seems to me we're all in a different wavelength But it can seem like I have judgment over people who, you know, like to drink, and that's just not true. But it can appear that way. I just have an opinion and a boundary for what is in my home. Now, I can go out to a social event and decide how long I want to stay, and with the sensibility, know that if you go later in the evening, people will likely have had a little more to drink. And I don't particularly care for that different wavelengths and behaviors, so I have a choice to be there or not. Of course, there's that ultimate discussion about smoking. People who smoke, it's a choice. They have an opinion to smoke or not smoke. And then others who say they don't want to smoke, but then they decide that smokers, and it's said frequently, smokers are bad. At least that's how it comes across. Because now when you've made a decision for yourself, let's say I don't smoke, I don't like smoking, but then I am imposing on other people when I say, oh, don't you know that smoking's not bad for you? It's imposing, therefore seeming to be a judgment. And it's a very interesting fine line where we can have opinions, but a sensibility knows where we would draw a boundary. So if somebody does not like smoking in their home, that's understood. If there's a particular place that people congregate where there would be no smoking, that's understood. But again, if some people should remove themselves to go have a cigarette and others are making comment, it now becomes a judgment because it's imposing their opinion on others. This week, this particular question was put to me about child rearing. Now, I don't think there's a topic that could be touchier than the one about raising children, especially nowadays, because there's so many different opinions or ways to be with children, many different philosophies about raising children. And I think in the last 50 years, I think there's every experiment imaginable put upon children. So everyone having their own ideas. Do you breastfeed? Do you not breastfeed? And I'll tell you, these are very big discussions for some people. How long do you do it? And it's, again, the opinions versus a judgment to be considerate and respectful of other people. Of course, I have my own humor about these things, but I'm also older and I can. And I won't say them necessarily on this show. But there are other things that even if you have an opinion of how to raise a child, that you like what they call the free-spirited child, a child that doesn't necessarily have to be accountable to as many boundaries, let's say, as someone else, that's well and fine, provided they are not naked on the table. And these are true stories. I mean, I hear these things very, very often. Go to visit, somebody's child sitting standing on the table, you know, and the mother says, oh, he's just spirited, or, you know, children without manners. Then the other people, you know, are offended or have their own opinions. Again, what happens in someone else's home versus the other. Now, I think that there is a point when we do have a judgment. When you've had a friend for, let's say, many years, now we enter into a new kind of dynamic with each other, let's say having children, then you start to see another side of people. You start to see another element. You start to see another application to life and things that you couldn't otherwise have known unless you were in a similar situation or growing through those changes. So when people, let's say a number of people, start having children at the same time, you're going to have conflict because everybody's going to have a different opinion. But where the opinions become difficult is when there is judgment, when somebody's imposing a judgment and still trying to set their own boundaries. So How do you set a boundary for yourself that says to others delicately, when you come to my home, I don't like your child dancing on the table? And people get quite offended. They do get, you know, they start to get squeamish. Then they take that as a, as they say, that personal affront. Well, does that mean you don't like me? Not at all. It's just that I don't care for that in my home on the table. There are other rules. And there's just no way around the difficulties between people, the dynamic between people, when you're trying to assert your boundaries and you have asserted boundaries and yet somebody is not listening or can't listen or takes it in a way that it's not intended, but you're really saying, it's just my opinion and this is my boundary. So it's difficult but necessary, and then the accountabilities of such. And that's the second part of the discussion. So I'm just going to pause for a moment. Is there anyone who might have a question at this point? Anything that you're coming across that you might like to ask about? Something that, if you're a practitioner perhaps, that you're managing it with a client, or you have a life situation of your own that you might like to call in, that we could discuss it or have another angle of it. I'm just checking the chat just to be sure, and here we are. All right. The accountabilities, I'm just going to carry on here. The accountabilities with imposing or starting to set your boundaries, because sometimes it is about imposing boundaries when people don't like it, is, again, it's another one of those touchy things, because you got to be accountable to what kind of a stand that you're going to take. And I'm of the mind that a lot of people don't follow through with the boundaries they're setting, and they don't, and primarily because they're afraid of consequence or the fallout, if you will. And so what we end up doing is creating many sets of rules, and this is what I believe is so harmful to the mind. That if we can start to realize how many different sets of rules we have, then we can start to find that center of ourselves to get healthy and to get well. But unless we really take that overview, that that wide view, and look at the circle, for instance, you got to do that in order to see how many sets of rules we have. And when I've taught classes, one of the examples that I use is, for instance, how many families tolerate the drunken Uncle Joe, because that's just Uncle Joe. But you don't like that behavior in anyone else, but it's okay because it's just Uncle Joe. So then everyone ends up tolerating Uncle Joe because that's just Uncle Joe. He just does that, you know. Well, that sends a message to children like none other, that it's okay for everyone except Uncle Joe. And that the next thing you know is everybody's wanting to be an exception to the rule. So we tend to, again, have a set of rules for the family, a set of rules for friends, a set of rules for clients, or your customers at work, or your boss. And what you will and won't say, and there's certainly something to be said for what's appropriate, understanding the environment, and where, again, you can have boundaries, or whose boundaries you must adhere to, but still trying to be at the center of your own core values, as Dr. Doug says frequently, is about what are your core values, and staying as close to your boundaries as possible. One of the things in hypnosis that anyone will learn, excuse me, is that no one can be made to do anything that they aren't capable of doing otherwise. You know, there's very often you see on these stage shows with hypnosis that people can be acting silly or acting like a chicken or, you know, and a puppy and so on. But that's the actor in someone. The facilitator is counting on that individual to be an actor, and it becomes fun, and it's harmless. So it's fun. Now, you cannot make someone do something that is against their core values. So if we begin to turn that around a little bit to say, I'm not going to act in life against my core values, I'm going to learn how to set my boundaries, and I'm going to begin to understand the difference of where I have an opinion versus a judgment, and understand better how it can be seen as a judgment when it's not, to the best of my ability, then it's up to someone else. There's no way you're not going to have difficulty. It's just going to happen in life. So again, if we step back, we have opinions, we have judgments, and understanding boundaries, and to the best of our abilities to do no harm and to do right. Now, the doing right, again, is doing right for you, and you will encounter situations in life, we all do, where we see that something is not being done right. And I think that that's just this universal understanding of right action and being in a place of right action, such as if you see a child being mistreated or another human being mistreated, the first tendency is to want to inject. And it might be that you have to step back and say, I'm putting myself and other people in danger to inject, but I can go get help. So that's the law of participation. That's what I call, whenever we encounter things, we must adhere to the law of participation to the degree that we are capable, able, and required. And of course, some jobs ought to be left to professionals, people who are in situations, so we don't make ourselves necessarily liable, and we don't put ourselves in harm's way. But we're always encountering situations that we have this little inner debate going on. So again, understanding that we have one set of rules, we also have an extraordinary instinct. Each of us has that instinct and an intuition to know what's required of us in that moment. So instinctually, in our dynamic with life, I think our instincts work better when we are not emotionally attached or involved. If we become emotionally involved, such as with friends and family, and we have these opinions versus judgment versus boundaries debates with ourselves, we lose sight of our instincts. We lose sight of our good sensibilities, and we absolutely lose sight of our intuition. So I've said this before in the show, and I'm just going to clarify this again. We all have an ESP. That's that front part of the brain. And various people have it to varying degrees, the sensory perception to gauge energy. We can read the energy in our environments. The intuition is that thing that is no explainable experience. There's no explanation to it. It's not in the now. We can't find any logical or sensible reasoning to it. Therefore, that would be a precognitive or clairvoyant experience. So, but really, sensibly speaking, we all have this ESP, front, and actually it's the ventromedial prefrontal cortex of the brain, to be exact. So how well does that serve us in our dynamics in life? Well, I think we've lost a lot of that. I think that's a difficult thing to watch and experience in ourselves, to keep sharp, to keep attentive, because it's hard to sustain that energy 24/7. We have emotions, we have bodily changes, we have lots of dynamic internally that can alter our perceptions and alter our good sensibilities. So it's that constant checking in with ourselves that we evolve, that we grow, that we stay as balanced as we can, and we check in with the difference between an opinion and a judgment. And I have my opinion of myself and others and situations today, but they can change. That's the beauty of an opinion. It's all changeable. Because I'm just basing this opinion on information that I have today and what I know about today. But I may know more tomorrow. Quite likely I'll know more tomorrow or next week. But I do my best not to impose a judgment. But it's likely going to be viewed as that, or I'm going to have that experience because I'm attempting to set my boundaries of good conduct in my life and how I want my life to be. Now, one of the things that we have to ask ourselves is, when is it appropriate? Well, it's appropriate to express yourself in the situation or ahead of time. Perhaps one of the most irritating things to me is asking what the rules are, and then, you know, somebody saying, oh, there's no, well, I know there's always rules in any situation, but that you get there and go along how you would normally do things at home or in your daily life or in my daily life, and then find out that the rules are different, but it's kind of later, because people don't know that they have rules until things irritate them. and that's just the way it goes. I mean, I have to say that about myself. I don't necessarily know what some boundaries will be until I encounter it, but it has to also be fair not to react, but to respond in a good way. To respond in a way that says, I didn't know I had that rule. I didn't know I had a boundary there. And how can I, you know, how can we better relate to each other to set this up? The problem is emotions and ego. Without ego, we don't have this force or fire of life. But ego will often take its other way, its other place. It gets stubborn. It has a relationship with emotion. And it gets in the way of good thinking. It also gets in the way of intuition and instinct. So it's really important to step back for a moment, center yourself into who am I, my core values, and even if you have to write them down for yourself, write down some basic things that you want to hold true in your daily life. When you're in a dilemma, and this is what I do, I have to remove myself very often. I say, wow, this is something I need to think about. I'm going to go gardening. And very recently, it was one of those things. And I said, you know what? I have to go gardening. And when I come back, I'll have a better sense of things, because it gives me time in a particular place or space that's comforting, that everything calms down, and I can think sensibly. So I can go through my checklist. And I always visualize a circle. I have to look at this part of the circle and that part. And if this rule applies here, does it also apply there? And that's still to get back to my center, to get back to my core values, my center self, to say, these are my boundaries. These are my ideals. These are my values. And here's where I see the sense of morality, if it applies. And not to impose judgment so much as to, I have this gauge, so that then I can sensibly, calmly come back into the situation. Now, I think where we get into a little bit of trouble is when everyone wants to be right, or we think we are not understood because somebody doesn't agree. And this is a huge problem, I think, in the dynamic of communication. If you don't agree with me, then it means to say you don't understand me. And I hear it very frequently. It's fair to say, I understand, I just don't agree. So this in your relationships with your family, friends, coworkers, perhaps clients, and just all the way around in your daily life, you're going to encounter these things. So it's just to center back into yourself. So it's, again, I'm going to just interrupt for a moment here and ask if anyone has any questions, if anybody has maybe a story to share or an insight perhaps that I haven't mentioned here that could be useful to listeners and people in the chat, or certainly for later in the archives as people listen to it. So feel free, please, share any other little ideas that you might have. I'm just doing a quick pause here. One of the things, I was taking notes of Dr. Kelly's show earlier, very, very good show, I might say, really important things like, are you living your dream? What do I call a good day? Just basically raising our own awareness with the hopes that we can set example to that to others. That's not always going to feel like the case, though. Everyone has those days where you say, geez, are we all on the same planet? Everyone has those days, but it's to get back to the center. And I think maybe it's a full moon, maybe it's something in the ethers. It just seems like it comes. So it's, again, to find those questions, find those things, those touchstones, if you will, that center you back into your own psychology, into your own emotions, and your own sense of spirituality. And I think that the do no harm, do good, it resonates to all of the above, all of the aforementioned. If you do no harm and do good. So keeping in mind, find those words, those key words. Maybe it's to take a breath. Maybe it's, you know, something to say, okay, I'm having a little moment here. I need to find a way to come back. So that we're always growing. This is the thing. We're always growing, changing, processing, developing. And hopefully there's an evolution. I mean, that is the intent to illumination. The intent to self-illuminate is to evolve. But not just to evolve spiritually. It's to evolve as a human being. Because no matter what we learn, the experience translates down here on Earth to how have I become a better human being today. So that is kind of where I always check in. I am a spiritual being learning to be human. I'm not a human being learning to be spiritual. I already have it. I just need to remember it. So I have to find those ways to remember. Many, many cultures use many different tools or things like, whether that's burning sweetgrass, sage, something that stimulates the senses, something that it might be music that stimulates the auditory, anything that gets you back into your sense, your center senses, and that you can walk forward knowing that you have done your best. And I think that was part of Dr. Kelly's message earlier, is that we're all just doing our best, moving forward and doing our best. So, Dr. Kelly, are you online?
I are.
And how is it sounding from over there?
The sound
any
quality or what you're saying?
So comment, any comments or anything that you'd like to add?
I do.
Yes.
Okay, not always, but I often do. Earlier you had talked about, and I'm just scrambling back through my memories here, you talked about being yourself. You talked about how we have rules for different people with, you know, friends or family or strangers or whatever. And that related to boundaries, I believe you were referring or at least including. And that's true with boundaries. I mean, we have different boundaries with strangers. I mean, if a stranger walked up and kissed us on the lips, probably not a good thing. Well, usually. And, you know, yet if it was our partner, that's fine, you know. So we have different rules for them. But it also occurred to me that, and that's fine. What I just mentioned was fine. Yeah, we have to have different boundaries for different people. But be who you are. That's what ran through my mind. Be who you are, regardless of whether it's a friend or family, regardless of whether you are on a stage speaking to people or whether you're having a one-on-one conversation, be who you are. So that was a comment I had.
That's a great one. Absolutely. And I think it was just that situation-appropriate boundaries. Like, we have different sets of rules, but they're situation-appropriate. You know, it's how would you speak with the woman at the cashier versus the, you know, somebody in your family. It might be a little bit of a different tone, or you might not reveal as much, we hope, to the cashier. But hopefully it's with that respect. You know, it's keeping that respect and regard intact.
Well, that brings up something, too. I mean, you obviously don't, you know, you don't, how do I put this? Another aspect of what I'm saying is be who you are and don't have secrets. You know, don't have the family secret. Don't be a real-life human being. You know, what you see is what you get. You know, I mean, I don't go broadcasting, you know, stuff to the cashier at the store or, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, if it comes up in conversation with people, I will tell them. I mean, if they ask, I mean, I have nothing to hide, so.
That's a very good point about having no secrets.
Yeah.
Very good one.
That's actually
a very good one. Hey, that's a good topic for another show.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And another day. Well, I hope everybody's enjoyed tonight's show. And thank you for joining us. And we'll just see you next week.